This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Is a system to tell landlords how much to charge for rent illegal? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. If you want to sell a stock, you check the market price on a screen to get the going rate. What if you're a landlord looking to rent an apartment? There's a company for that. It's called RealPage, where landlords sign up to get rental pricing data, but is that illegal collusion on prices? RealPage has been hit with lawsuits in Arizona and Washington. Marketplace's Matt Levin has that.
Big corporate landlords provide RealPage with data you can't just see on Zillow. For example, the rent a tenant actually pays versus what's advertised publicly. In return, RealPage's algorithm says, hey, that two-bed apartment with off-street parking you got? Here's what you should charge for it, based on what everyone else is charging. University of Wisconsin law professor Peter Carstensen says RealPage is basically a cartel enabler.
That information exchange in and of itself, that's an agreement in restraint of trade.
Arizona and Washington, D.C. have sued RealPage and the landlords that use it for wide-scale rent fixing. RealPage did not respond to a request for comment. In public statements, the company says lawsuits misunderstand its algorithm. Shanti Singh at the advocacy group Tenants Together says renters lose bargaining power when a secret algorithm sets the price.
The lack of transparency encourages rents to spiral upwards.
Two landlords accused in a class action suit of using RealPage to inflate rents have recently settled those claims. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
An upside surprise for China's economy, with news today that gross domestic product there grew 5.3% in the 12 months through March. Beijing has been spending heavily on boosting high-tech manufacturing and building infrastructure to pull the country out of the doldrums. Retail spending still soft, however, and real estate is still in a precarious spot. Here, S&P futures are down 0.1% now. NASDAQ futures down 0.2%. Interest rates are running higher, with the 10-year benchmark up again, 4.65% today. Stock in former President Donald Trump's social media company ended yesterday at $26.61 on a drop of 18%. Trump Media and Technology Group came into this world the other week at $50 a share. The stock is up 1.5% in pre-market trading now. It's about millions of new shares on the way. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
In its filing yesterday, Trump Media and Technology Group said the issuance of more shares was not a certainty, but the SEC filing does mean early investors can exercise what are known as stock warrants. If they do so, that would lead to more shares being issued, which would dilute the stock price. The company said former President Trump and other key players are still subject to a six-month lockup period that prevents them from selling shares. Trump Media went public on March 26th by merging with a special purpose acquisition company, a SPAC. Post-merger, the company was initially valued at about $8 billion. It's now worth about $3.5 billion. That is a relatively typical loss for companies taken public through SPAC deals. They tend to underperform the stock market at large, especially after initial investor euphoria ends. Trump Media shares first plunged at the beginning of the month when the company disclosed that it lost more than $58 million last year and said it would struggle to pay its debts as they come due. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Next, how living with debt can change your life even when the debt is paid off. A perspective today on financial insecurity from an essayist and social critic who wasn't even sure it was right to buy himself a pair of nice sneakers even when he had the money. Michael Arsenault's new book is called I Finally Bought Some Jordans. We connected to talk about the psychological interest payments that linger. Mr. Arsenault, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
part of this is about emotional debt, but let's start with the money debt. You don't come from money, and you ended up with what, student loan debt?
I had private student loan debt, which is a very particular type of debt impacting lots of Americans, but particularly like Black college graduates. And I had a six-figure debt that essentially required me to pay close to anywhere from $800 to $1,200 a month for like a little over a decade.
But you paid it off. So, you know, in theory, knock yourself out now. But what? You find that it still hangs on like some sort of haunting ghost.
It's hard to really escape it, but what I try to write about in the new book is finding ways to kind of remove more of that shame that I carry with me for a long time and to really think about ways in which I can treat myself but not really buy into, I don't know, materialism or, again, shame.
So if a man wants to buy a pair of Jordans to put a stylish bounce in their step, and if he has enough money, he should buy a pair of Jordans, yet there's part of you saying don't do it. Where does that voice come from?
You know, truth be told, particularly for a lot of poor Black working class people, but particularly Black people, they've always been admonished since the 90s. Like, if you don't have enough, you don't deserve nice things in the way other people do. But with the psyche of debt and how much debt impacted every facet of my life, some of that really did bleed into me. So it became like this fear, like I can't treat myself. I have to worry about the next bill or the next crash or the next whatever's going to happen. And finally, I just gave myself a reprieve to like, you know, I'm not exactly where I want to be, but I've done all right by myself. So me getting those J's was a nice way of saying, you know, like, you're doing okay. So I encourage other people to do the same.
On this subject of the industry of psychological counseling, you've noted that that industry is itself set up to be exclusionary.
I think generally speaking, Americans have difficulty like going to that because by design, it's a privilege that a lot of people can't afford to access. And therapy itself, you have to pay for that usually. It's not cheap. So a lot of people who would benefit it from the most just don't have access to it. So I don't want to punish people for not turning to that route. It's just people are doing the best with what tools they have. Give them more tools if you want more people to go to therapy, you know? Pay for my therapy. I'm kidding.
Michael Arsenault, his latest book is a collection of essays entitled I Finally Bought Some Jordans. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our producers are James Graham, Naomi Rainey, Nick Perez, Ariana Rosas, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. Our senior producer is Meredith Gerritsen-Morby. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.